everyone. I'm Danielle DeVitos, and today I'm going to discuss hospitalizations related to family violence and child maltreatment in Appalachia. And I'd like to thank my co-authors and colleagues at West Virginia University and at various institutions throughout Canada. I have no relationships to disclose for any authors. And the data that I'm going to discuss today is the first step in an analysis of Appalachian and non-Appalachian emergency department visits and hospitalizations related to family violence. And this was part of a seed funding grant from the Preventing Violence Across the Lifespan, or PREVAIL, research network that's funded by the Canadian Institutes of Health Research. So Appalachia is a 205,000 square mile geographically and culturally defined region that ranges from southern New York to northern Mississippi and Alabama. And it's comprised of 420 counties and 8 independent cities in 13 states. The region itself is 42% rural, compared with the entire United States being about 20% rural. So many historians and anthropologists over time have tried to define what it means to be Appalachian or what Appalachian culture is. And although, like many populations, Appalachians themselves are probably more diverse than they are similar, there's not really one Appalachian culture or Appalachian identity. Some research has shown that the following values are thought to be inherently Appalachian. So having a great sense of family, being self-reliant and hardworking, and having traditional values are thought to be Appalachian characteristics. However, the region itself is severely socioeconomically distressed. So people living in Appalachia have lower income levels and lower levels of educational attainment compared to those living outside of the region. There is significantly poorer health status among Appalachians compared to non-Appalachians. So there's greater morbidity and mortality from chronic diseases and injuries in Appalachian populations. And there are also significant disparities related to mental health and substance use, particularly alcohol use and prescription drug abuse within the region. So all of this is coupled with an extreme shortage in healthcare providers and health services. So these maps just kind of show these health disparities and socioeconomic disparities. So the red colors are where there is a greater percentage of adults who are obese and adults with diabetes on the top two maps. And then the bottom two maps show a greater proportion of lower income and lower levels of education. So similarly with drug abuse and mental health, the maps on the left show drug overdose rates by state and prescription painkillers sold by state. And the map on the right is the mean number of mentally unhealthy days among adults in the past month. And so all of these maps show a very high concentration of these conditions within the Appalachian United States. So these socioeconomic disadvantages, health disparity conditions, these are all things that are associated with violence, yet we really know very little about violence from a public health and medical perspective in Appalachia. Even the psychosocial and cultural characteristics that people think may be pervasive throughout the region could be associated with violence. So, for example, we know that traditional or more rigid gender norms are associated with higher acceptability of violence against women. Individuals who are very self-reliant may not seek out health care because they don't think that they need to or they don't want to reach out to do that. And in certain Appalachian and many different populations, putting family above the needs of the individual could actually influence talking about issues that are happening within the family environment, including family violence. So taken together, all of these factors and characteristics really point to a need to look at violence within this region. And so that's kind of what some folks at West Virginia and I are trying to do. And so we're going to conduct some analyses to look at hospitalizations related to family violence, and estimate the number of hospitalizations and describe demographic and clinical characteristics of these populations. And specifically, family violence for this study is defined as intimate partner violence, and I'll call that IPV, and child maltreatment. So the data from this study come from the Healthcare Cost and Utilization Project, or HCUP. The nationwide inpatient sample is one database in the family of HCUP databases. The NIPS, or the Nationwide Inpatient Sample, is the largest all-payer publicly available inpatient database in the U.S., and it contains data from about 8 million hospital stays from about 1,000 community hospitals each year. The data are weighted to produce national estimates, and they produce a 20% stratified sample of all hospitals in the country. So the foundation of this data is billing data. And so we can get some good information about number of hospitalizations, demographics of the patient populations, diagnoses that co-occur at the time of the hospitalization, and hospital charges. And so I'm just going to present some descriptive information that we've pulled over a 12-year period using this database. And we actually looked at the Appalachian Regional Commission's classifications for what an Appalachian and a non-Appalachian county would be. And so this database does contain county-level data, and so there's a variable using FIPS codes, or Federal Information Processing Codes. And you can look at those codes and then determine if it's an Appalachian or a non-Appalachian county. And so we intended to abstract all data from all Appalachian counties, with the exception of Alabama, because it doesn't contribute any data during any of these years to the database. However, upon our preliminary analyses, we found out that Ohio, Tennessee, Georgia, and South Carolina actually restrict their county-level data. So all states contribute state-level data, but they have the decision whether or not they want to release that county-level data. And so these states have chosen not to. And I'll talk at the end about how we plan to go get the rest of this data, but what I'm going to talk about today is just the data from the counties in the remaining 8 states within Appalachia. So we abstracted the cases that had ICD-9 and external cause of injury codes for intimate partner violence, and there were 8 codes and 18 related to child maltreatment. And we selected these based on existing research. Data was analyzed using SAS-Calable-Sudan to produce weighted estimates and 95% confidence intervals. Statistical significance was indicated when confidence intervals did not overlap. And in the abstract that I wrote, I lumped all of these hospitalizations together, but what I'm going to present today are, I'm going to present the separate populations of those hospitalized for IPV and child maltreatment. So over this 12-year period, there were over 460 million hospital stays related to all causes in those Appalachian counties. For intimate partner violence in adults, there were 2,579, and for child maltreatment, 2,418. So looking at these hospitalizations by gender, we see that about 86% of IPV-related hospitalizations involved females, and for child maltreatment, the gender breakdown between males and females was roughly equal. The mean age for IPV-related hospitalizations was 54 years, and males were significantly older than females. And there were no statistical differences in gender for the child maltreatment hospitalizations, but we can see that males are older. It just wasn't significant. And so the mean age for children was 3.7 years. The mean length of stay for IPV-related hospitalizations was 5.1 days and was 6.5 days for child maltreatment hospitalizations. And unfortunately, the NIST has really bad data with regard to the race variable because its hospital billing data, it varies wildly from hospital to hospital and state to state, whether or not that's coded very well. So of the data that we do have, we know that these hospitalizations involved at least patients that were at least 50% white, and a fewer were black, Hispanic, or of other races. This data shows the community level, the median community level income. And we see that over 40% of these hospitalizations for both types of violence were involving patients from the lowest annual income bracket. So these are the poorest patients who made, as a family, less than $39,000 per year. And if we look at hospitalizations and other data that's been published specifically with regard to child maltreatment, these income levels are much more equal. So we have about 20 to 25% of patients in each income bracket. But here in these Appalachian counties, it's mostly concentrated in the lowest income quartile. In terms of, I don't know what that percentage is, but In terms of the primary payer, or who these visits were billed to, for IPV-related visits, 42% or hospitalizations, 42% of them were billed to Medicare, and 28% were billed to Medicaid. And 3 in 4 child maltreatment-related hospitalizations were billed to Medicaid. And this slide shows the hospital types that these hospitalizations occurred at. And so for intimate partner violence-related hospitalizations, 45% occurred at rural hospitals, compared with 59% occurring at urban teaching hospitals for child maltreatment hospitalizations. Most patients for both IPV and child maltreatment had a routine disposition home, but for those experiencing IPV, 29% were discharged to another facility. So that could be a skilled nursing facility or a rehab facility. And in terms of the child maltreatment data, 5% died in the hospital. And if we look at, there's some national data published about child maltreatment using this database, and for the whole U.S., about 3.6% of hospitalizations resulted in death. And pediatric hospitalizations that don't involve maltreatment, for those, the inpatient mortality is about 0.5%. So we see a much higher percentage there. And this slide shows the average and total charges for these hospitalizations. And although it's not statistically significant, males do have a higher average charge for both types of violence. And just to give you an idea about what a non-maltreatment-related hospitalization may cost, other data nationally show that a child maltreatment-related hospitalization costs about $8,500. So those that don't involve violence are much less expensive, and those that involve violence are more. And so all of these hospitalizations total almost $100 million over the 12-year period. This database also allows us to look at the co-occurring diagnoses that are also present within the medical records of a patient that was hospitalized related to intimate partner violence, or perhaps someone may have been hospitalized due to a drug overdose, for example, but it was revealed during the course of the stay or upon hospitalization that intimate partner violence may have been a cause or may have been involved as well. So these are the top 12 other diagnoses that are associated with an IPV diagnosis. And so we see things like mood disorders, mental health disorders, poisonings, complications of pregnancy, and some acute injuries. For child maltreatment, we also see mental health disorders, but more acute injuries such as intracranial injury, fractures, and crushing injuries or internal injuries. So this data helps us characterize the types of patients that are hospitalized related to both child maltreatment and intimate partner violence. We don't know a lot about intimate partner violence hospitalizations. There's some that's been published about child maltreatment-related hospitalizations, and I presented a few comparisons that from that data that we do have. But not only does this add to that existing literature, but now we know a little bit more about a historically difficult-to-reach, underserved, and disadvantaged population. So most patients were from low-income communities, had Medicaid or Medicare as a primary payer, and we saw significantly higher average charges for these types of visits than compared to those that are not related to violence. So there are multiple limitations with this study, primarily the first one being that codes related to family violence are severely underreported within medical records. They're undercoded, and so we know that this is most likely a vast underestimate of actual hospitalizations that involve family violence. So a recommendation for this would be to have more uniform reporting requirements or coding requirements related to violence. Typically, some states don't even have to code E-codes. And so the only code we have for actual intimate partner violence that indicates that the violence was as a result of perpetrated by an intimate partner is an E-code. And so if a state doesn't have to use E-codes, we know we're not going to have really great data for that state with intimate partner violence hospitalizations. The state is also de-identified, so it would be really nice to have more information from medical records to be able to look at, or know, for example, the patient's actual income level and not just the income level of their neighborhood. So that's a limitation. And lastly, Appalachian or rural populations may be underrepresented in healthcare data. So I mentioned that there's a shortage of services and a lack of access to care. And so it may be that people just aren't receiving less care, and so they may not be represented in this database as much as we may think. So we have some next steps to kind of take this very preliminary data and take it further. So I mentioned that four states had restricted their county-level data. So my colleague and I have actually obtained permission from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality to travel to Rockville, Maryland, and actually get access to all the Appalachian data that exists using the state inpatient databases. So we're going to get all of those Appalachian counties and be able to examine these fields using that data. And then we're going to compare that to a sample of non-Appalachian counties. And this will enable us to look at some rates and differences in rates and maybe some differences in socio-demographic or clinical characteristics. So that's our next analysis. And then we're also going to look at emergency department visits related to intimate partner violence and child maltreatment. And they've also given us permission to not only look at family violence, but all types of violence. So we may be able to look at assault and poisonings and things like that. So we're excited to travel there, and maybe within the next year I'll have more data comparing Appalachian and non-Appalachian populations. That's all I have. Thank you. Any questions? A colleague of mine that looked at this data thought that it may be because more of the child maltreatment hospitalizations were occurring at urban teaching hospitals. They thought that the teaching hospitals may just be better prepared to identify child maltreatment, handle child maltreatment, so maybe it's an identification issue.
Yeah. I'm just related to that. I'm an emergency physician. So
okay.
I would suspect that the rural hospital transferred the patient to a pediatric trauma center, mm-hmm. and that was going to be part of the point of did you know whether the hospitalization was the primary hospital they were taken to or the hospital they were ultimately discharged from, because there mm-hmm. could be an inter-facility transfer.
Yeah. We do have, there is data in this database about the admission source, but it was really, really messy, and so I didn't put it on there. A lot of it was missing. And most child maltreatment hospitalizations were admitted through the ED, but for the intimate partner violence ones, not very many were. So you're probably right in that many, in both cases, maybe they were transferred.
Yeah.
There
isn't a pediatric ICU, mm-hmm. there isn't a pediatric trauma service, mm-hmm. pediatric surgeon, all the things you would
yeah.
need. So they get shipped to the major medical center.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Derby in Los Angeles. We have a system with 136 California hospitals. We're trying to build something around hospital discharge data. Mm-hmm. What we're going to build is primarily who has the most exposure. The ICD codes are just strange. They don't get paid for them.
Yeah.
We've got something to train, because what we're going to do is try to give the hospitals a way of capturing their reports. Most of them don't know how many reports, much less what they report.
Mm-hmm.
They could pull up, say, all their admits with fractures and see which cases were rejected.
Yeah.
Can be evaluated out from the beginning. They can start pushing in the captive regulations, say, you can talk to each other both ways. They just don't go off checking all the time.
Okay. Yeah, the ICD-9 and especially the ECO data is just poor.
Because it's kind of an older parent.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think that for the IPV hospitalizations, that the age is high, it's older because they are hospitalizations. So looking at this database for ED visits, for example, the intimate partner violence-related hospitalizations, the mean age is around 35, and that's what we see with other surveys as well. So I don't think that this is the age group that is more likely to experience intimate partner violence, for example, but if they are being hospitalized for it, it may be because there are other comorbid conditions that might necessitate hospitalization. And I think you had another, did you have another part of that question related to the child maltreatment? Okay. That's a great question. And I'll go back to the codes. And so the answer is we may be. So I just had a paper accepted looking at the emergency department visits in this database just nationally related to IPV. And I specifically only chose that first intimate partner violence code up there, abuse by a spouse or partner. We submitted it to several different journals, and what we heard back was that is too narrow. That is too narrow. You need to broaden your scope, and you need to include adult maltreatment, adult sexual abuse, and really cast the net wider. Even though I was kind of purposely trying to be narrow, that's what we heard from multiple people is go wider. And so I think that the first E code and the adult maltreatment unspecified and the adult physical abuse, those three codes together have been shown to identify intimate partner violence in some over 90% of cases in many different chart reviews. So that's definitely a limitation here. Is a lot of this really could identify, especially with intimate partner violence, could be identifying elder abuse or abuse between two adults that aren't in an intimate relationship. Yeah, that's a great point. I think it's mostly to do with using billable codes and the most billable types of codes. So, for example, in this data set, an E code cannot be the first listed diagnosis in the medical record. So we might see something like the injury, like a hip fracture or facial fracture as the top, the reason that they're there, but the external cause of injury is intimate partner violence. So you have firsthand experience with this, is that?
Yeah, very often contusional will be marked abrasion, but unless you have a good person who does go through the chart and codes and looks for the mechanism of injury, which the mechanism often isn't included in the primary billing section, which is the MSRE code.
Okay, thank you very much.